Rise to Offend, a podcast that explores people who rose to offend in society and their legacy today. I'll be your host, Brandon Hahn, and today we'll be doing part two of two of our in-depth look into the one known as the Old Dirty Bastard.
Mr. Dirt Dog, Mr. Man of All Rainbows, we out here on Franklin and Dean, Clarkson and Dean, where it all be happening in this, you know what I'm saying, I'm just lying to a 60-second, Big Kaheem, you know what I'm saying, Sons of Man, y'all know what time it is, you know. Basically, what we here for, is I don't really know. I got an album coming out in 2 more months. It's called The Black Man Is God. It's called The Black Man Is God. Next album. This is for the children. You know what I'm saying? I got this idea from myself, of course, but this is for the children. I got that idea for Crazy Sam. You know what I'm saying? Because he's for the children. So, before I wasn't really for the children, because, you know what I'm saying? Y'all little bastards, man. Y'all some bad motherfuckers. But I realized that when I was a kid, I used to be a little bastard, too. Now, I was bad like a motherfucker, too. So, to all my little bastards out there, my bad bastards, keep being bad. Just make sure you get a good education, school. You ain't got to tell your teacher off. Tell a teacher off with education. You know what I'm saying? Bomb his ass. You know what I'm saying? White devil motherfuckers. Yo, but, no, I, when I say white devil, I'm just saying that, you know, you got some good devils, you got some bad devils. Say you got some good black men, you got some bad devil black men. You know what I'm saying? Because even though black men is God, we know that the white man came from the black man. So that was created the devil. So we know that. Where'd Panther with that get high, man?
And joining me as always, Petter Spych and Jocelyn Sharp. The year is 1994. Fresh off the success of the Wu-Tang Clan's game-changing debut, enter the Wu-Tang 36 Chambers.
Here I go. Deep-tight flow. Jack you stole can never get this. No, I'm Terry Bomb and shit. Boom. That's warming up a little bit. Rapping in is what's happening. Keep the pockets stacking in. Hands clapping in. At the party when I move my body. Gotta get up and be somebody. Grab the microphone, put strength to the bone. Dan, dan, dan. Into the Wu-Tang zone. Showing up when I rock that stuff. Huff, puff. I'm gonna catch your bluff. Tough, rough. Kicking rhymes like Jim Kelly or Alex Kelly. I'm a beat a belly rhymes. Coming raw style. Hardcore. Niggas be coming to the hip-hop store. Coming to buy grocery from me. Turn out to be a hip-hop MC. The law, in order to enter the Wu-Tang, you must bring the old dirty bastard type slang. Represent the Jizza, Abbott, Ruzza, Shaquan, inspect the deck. Dirty hoe getting low with his flow. Introduced in the ghost face killer. Never could get it locked.
ODB was now a celebrity. He had money, prestige, and one of Dirty's many vices were readily available at all times. And in this case, the vice in question was women.
His first name was the Wizard of Do-It-Land.
Yes. That's what the girls called him, yes.
No, he was the Wizard of Do-It-Land.
Don't never bring your girl around him, because he don't care. He'll break that up fast.
I was like 14, 15. I remember one time I had a girlfriend. I was in love with her, and he was the first one to tongue kiss my girlfriend. I didn't tongue kiss her first. He tongue kissed my girlfriend first. And after I saw he tongue kissed my girlfriend, I learned how to tongue kiss my girlfriend.
Seeing this dedication. I used to fight the nigga for bitches on tour. Just take my pussy, that motherfucker. That's my nigga. I understand.
Nobody could talk to them. It's like, they was just for Dirty. And it was like, he'll come out the room, they all stand up. Come on, room, close the door, next thing, come out. And say, I'm talking about, they was all waiting, they turned it. So I was like, damn, I wish I'd get that shit one day.
ODB wasn't what you would call a looker, but women were throwing themselves at his feet. Before success, women wouldn't even give him a second glance. But after the success of Wu-Tang, women were fighting with each other just to be one of the women he would have sex with that night.
There's so many memories with Dirk McGirt. He loved women, you know what I mean? So, you know, he just loved to go in, you know what I mean? And one of them joints, I think he might have been burning or something. You know what I mean? Or he had friction burns on his dick, and I seen the nigga, he loved pussy so much, I seen the nigga wrap gauze around his dick. You know what I mean? Just to get some pussy, he then put the condom over the gauze so his dick was looking like that fat. You know what I mean? Still fucked the bitch. You know what I'm saying? He still fucked his shit. You know what I mean? So I got mad moments with him though, but that's just the, like one of the littlest ones though. Then that's my dude right there. He's off the meat. He's off the meat.
Do you see this as an act of depravity, or is this average rock star behavior?
I think it's average rock star behavior. I don't know. I don't know very many rock star tales that don't end in the women fighting in the green room to get to the bed.
Right.
To be desired is like what people become rock stars to be. Like even when they're undesirable, they're like, you know what? If I have money and I have fame, my face is on there, I can get whatever I want. But quality ain't there. And that's the thing, is that even in his moments, he might be getting all these women, but in actuality, he's not really getting much.
And I want to fuck that bitch, Michelle, by the way. The one that Coolio fucked up. I know she got some good white pussy, man.
They pussy stink. That's what I love about women. Don't worry about your pussy being stinking, girl, because I like it stinking like that. You see, when it's stinking like that, I can dig you where you coming from, stinky poo. I got dirty panties for your little poo-poo, girl, your little coo-coo-pee. You do got some girls that coochie don't stink, so I like that too.
Do you think being surrounded by fast women day in and day out affected his overall view of women, or do you believe this is always who he was?
I can't say one way or the other, but I can say that I don't think that if you are constantly inundated with the same type of person, like this is why stereotypes and prejudices exist. Not that they're always okay, but sometimes they're just a condition of what you've been experiencing. And if all he experiences over and over and over again is that women are willing to lay down and open their legs to him, he's only ever going to expect that.
This is always who he was. Always. Always wanted to be a womanizer, always wanted women to be that role. Otherwise, he wouldn't have partaken in it. You don't fall in line. That's who you are. If you have money and you get rich and this and that, but you still have a moral compass and you still respect people, that's going to come into play.
Probably Old Dirty Bastard is like the most interesting person I've ever met. You know what I'm saying? Like somebody who tells you they have gonorrhea right when they're talking to you, that's pretty interesting right there.
Would you say ODB was addicted to sex or addicted to the power of having women throw themselves at him?
I think it's both. I think that both of them are just as addicting. I think one feeds the other.
ODB was addicted to anything to make him not feel real, to make him feel beyond that, whether it's drugs, whether it's alcohol, whether it's sex, anything. Old Dirty Bastard would set it in songs that he wanted a nasty bitch. He just wanted to see something new, something real, something gross. You know, he didn't care of the human element because mentally he wasn't there in the human element. He was beyond it.
Well, as a result of ODB's taste for women, he ended up with 13 children with 9 different women.
Well, let me start with the kids. How many kids do you have, and what about the most recent child made you kind of stand up and take note?
The kids, how many kids do I have? Well, all the kids in the world is mine, okay? So I can't count how many kids I got. All the children in the universe is mine, everywhere, you know what I mean? But it's just, the kids love Dirty, you know what I mean? Every time they see Dirty, they smile, you know what I mean? And that's automatically make Dirty smile, you know what I mean? Maybe want to get on my knees and play Lego blocks with them and everything. So it's all good.
Well, let me ask you about this most recent child. The most recent, was his son who was born to you? It's your 13th child. And from what I was told, that made you kind of stop and say, take a little stock of where you are in your life and what you need to do for them. Is that true?
Yeah, little Prince Osiris is here. Yeah, and you know, it's just like, you know, I just want the right things for them, you know what I mean? And have them, you know, have their head on point, you know what I mean? And just want the best for them, you know what I mean? Just like any parent want for their children.
What's your relationship like with your kids? I know that there are a lot of them, but let's say in a regular basis with most of your kids, are you there as much as you can be? I mean, how does that work?
I'm there as much as I can be, you know what I mean? You know, I see them, I talk to them on the regular. I mean, they're crazy about their dad. There's no doubt about it. And the dad is crazy about them, too. They all look like me. little badasses.
As documented in part one, Dirty was not the type of celebrity that found success and move away from the people that supported him from day one. Despite his newfound fame, Dirty didn't leave the impoverished surroundings he grew up around in Brooklyn. Instead, he embraced them. He was a man of the people, a hero to some, but unfortunately, a target to others.
He was shot 3 times. You know, he got shot up on Albany Avenue.
Kingston Avenue.
Kingston, yeah.
In 1994, he and an unnamed rapper got into an argument over the use of the name Brooklyn Zoo, which is the name ODB would call his crew. The argument got heated and Dirty was shot in the abdomen. He was immediately rushed to the hospital and left against the doctor's orders the same day.
Some with this Brooklyn Zoo. A gang up there with named Brooklyn Zoo, and he named his group Brooklyn Zoo.
It was a given that Dirty always did what he wanted, when he wanted. What are the pluses and the negatives to constantly living every day like it's your last?
It literally can be your last. I mean, when you live every day like it's your last, you're not being present in the moment. Like, you're not just living your life. Like, living every day like it's your last is, like, such a terrible piece of advice, because you would be such a terrible, like, you're not, that's not a good reality, right? That's not the way to live. You don't take care of your body, you don't take care of your mind, you don't take care of your soul, and then you're going to expect to, like, continue to move on. Like, you can't live every day like it's your last.
13 children, 9 women. Now check it out. Yeah, let that sink in real quick. There's a mantra I believe: you're only as happy as your saddest kid. And there's a lot of kids there. He's creating human lives like they don't matter. He's just bouncing them out, you know, and that's not something that's okay. But on any level or any mean, it shows that he doesn't care about, like Jocelyn was saying, anything but the moment.
My father, knowing that me and my brothers knew a lot of people with the projects growing up, like, if he want to go somewhere, he'll tell us, like, all right, he'll tell them, yo, walk with my sons. You know what I mean? He would want to go outside by himself. Knowing, yeah, he got videos, just the same man with videos on TV, but he's like, I don't need nobody walking with me. That's the type of person. I'm
stubborn.
And this and that, and he would go out by himself, chains on.
Do you think the impoverished surroundings that he grew up around created that mindset?
Well, I'm sure, because when you grow up in these lower income neighborhoods, especially in extremely urban areas in America, the rates of homicide, suicide, all of these things are much higher. So if you're around the fact that life is fragile, I think that does affect you psychologically. It's impossible for it not to, if all you see your whole life is people dying 40 or 50 years before they're supposed to.
There's a lot of people that grow up in those neighborhoods and they want to get out. And there's a lot of people that would grow up in those neighborhoods and they want to be kings of those neighborhoods. They want the respect of their peers and their people, you know? And the way to do that, in a lot of ways at that time, was hip hop or being a gangster, meaning selling drugs, doing a lot of different things that were nefarious in a way. For someone like him, from looking back on his life, all he wanted was his place in the world, but he also wanted to have that place be seen by those people he grew up with. Does that make sense?
Yeah, he wanted his throne to be out front and open.
Some people got a tendency of judging things every now and then and judging the ways and actions of people, but it don't work that way.
If you don't know where people came from, how are you going to know about that person?
When you and I get shot in the streets, we're victims. Case closed. But when someone like Old Dirty Bastard gets shot in the streets, it gave him instant publicity and notoriety. The funny thing about ODB was getting shot was somehow overlooked thanks to another stunt he would pull that would eventually have an impact on America.
Me and Murdoch, we went to the supermarket, you know what I'm saying? We had food stamps. Like, the real food stamps in the thing. And me and Murdoch was, like, scared to spin it. And then motherfucking Dirty was like, he screamed that shit out so loud, like, y'all niggas scared to spend food stamps? And motherfucker shoot. And ever since then, I ain't never been scared to spend food stamps.
In 1995, a few weeks before the debut of his solo record, Dirty, who was still collecting money thanks to the success of Wu-Tang Clan's debut album, and with a new $45,000 check he was awarded as an advance for the upcoming solo album, Dirty was somehow still eligible for food stamps. So he gathered his wife and 2 of his children into a limousine and headed to the welfare office, where he cashed a check for $375 and received food stamps. This probably wouldn't have even been a blip on the radar, but that is if MTV wasn't there with a camera crew filming the entire thing. The incident was seen as an example of welfare abuse and was even used as evidence that led to the Welfare Reform Act of 1996.
The reason why I came up with the welfare ID, you know, I just want to show people, you know, how to be real with it. I'm on welfare right now, for real. But she put that card in there, we got food stamps. And yo, I'm glad to get the food stamps.
Why
would you want to get free money?
For the people that want to call up the welfare, man, I think that's terrible.
Now, you know how hard it is for people to live without nothing? You owe me 40 acres and a mule anyway. For real. I'm in this rap game to get money. You know what I'm saying? I got babies. It's time to take care of my babies.
Dirty went on to say he didn't think it was going to work, and he did it just to be funny. But how do you think the people that were negatively affected by the Welfare Reform Act viewed this stunt?
That shit was hilarious. I saw this on MTV. And it was hilarious, okay? However, it's not a joke because you're playing with government money.
Right.
Okay? But to see someone drive up in a limo and cash a $375, it was food stamps, if I remember correctly. It was a moment of like, God damn, this guy doesn't give a fuck. And there's something so fucking universally awesome to someone that can be like, I'm going to make a living doing this, and I'm going to take money from the government. However, does that show from this standpoint, at this point in my life, does that show absolute abuse of the system? Yes. Did that hurt other people? Yes. Are there other people that are doing that are not on camera at the time? Probably yes.
Well, and I think the thing is that you can't forget that there's a lot of people in that neighborhood that may have improved their life even slightly. And when you come right outside the parameters of what is eligible for welfare, you know, think about the guys that, you know, finally got the full-time job and had to give up welfare and is now paying for food out of his own pocket. And then ODB just has this $45,000 check and then needs that $375 too. Like, that's a wild spit in the face to me.
The gangster mentality isn't think about the other people.
No.
It's what's mine is mine and I'm going to get mine. ODB, in essence, will never have the mentality of like, there's consequences ever.
I bust that nigga ass right now. Ain't no, but none of them niggas can't fuck. What? Nigga, you could never fuck me, my nigga. I'll fuck you up right now. What? Fuck, bust your motherfucking ass, boy. Ain't no motherfucking joke. Know who you talking to? Old dirty bastard. What's the hell? I'll fuck you up right now. Yeah. What?
That nigga dirty.
Dirty, like the rest of the members of the Wu-Tang, took advantage of the contract that would allow him to seek a record contract with a different label. He signed with Elektra Records, and on March 28th, 1995, Old Dirty Bastard would release his solo record titled Return to the 36 Chambers, the Dirty Version, to rave reviews. And of course, the album cover was a mocked version of his New York State welfare card.
Ooh, baby, I like it, bro. Yeah, baby, I like it. Give me the mic so I can take it away. Off on a natural charge, bon voyage. Yeah, from the home of the Dodgers, Brooklyn squad. Wu-Tang killer, he's on the swarm. Rain on your college ass disco dorm. For you to even touch my skill, you gotta go to one killer B, and he ain't gonna kill now. Chop that down, pass it all around. Lyrics get hard, quick cement to the ground. For any MC in any 52 states, I get psycho killer Norman Bain. My producer slam, my flow is like bam. Jump on stage and then I dip down.
It was the second solo album from the Wu-Tang Clan following the release of their debut album, and it was a smash hit. Return to the 36 Chambers, the Dirty Version, peaked at number 7 on the Billboard charts and number 2 on the top R&B and hip-hop albums chart, earning gold status after selling 500,000 copies in only 3 months after its release, and earned him a Grammy nomination for Best Rap Album in 1996. He lost to Naughty by Nature.
The money made me go solo, you know what I'm saying? You know, I just wanted more money, and I wanted people to hear my music, you know, where I come from, my dialogue, you know, what is really what Old Dirty Bastard is about. Not really what Wu-Tang is about, what really kicks Old Dirty's ass in hip-hop.
Rolling Stone even hinted that ODB might be the most original vocalist in hip-hop history. The infamous George Clinton believed ODB introduced a new cadence to music. Kanye West has said he'd cut his finger off just to have ODB's voice, and Questlove from The Roots and Jimmy Fallon has said that the song Brooklyn Zoo was radical, that it changed the way he thought about hip-hop music.
I'm the one man army ace on. I never been tooken out. I keep MCs looking out. I drop signs like Crosby dropping babies. Enough to make a nigga go crazy.
in the G building, taking all types of medicines. Your ass thought you were better than a sun. I keep planets in orbit while I be coming with deeper and more shit. Enough to make you break and shake your ass as I create. Rhyme good as the tasty cake makes. This style I'm mastered in. Niggas catching headaches, what? You need aspirin? This type of pain you couldn't even kill with Midol. Fuck around, get sprayed with Lysol in your face like a can of mace, baby. It's just burning with fucking hell you're learning.
It's one thing to receive praise from fans and critics alike, but it's another thing altogether after you receive critical acclaim from your peers and heroes after your first debut album. If you were faced with similar success, do you think it would motivate you to take your career more seriously, or would you say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, and double down on the wild card persona that fueled your creativity?
Oh, man. I mean, we talk about this a lot on this podcast, is these personas and how can they impact both positively and negatively your career path as an entertainer, right? And I feel that there is something to be said for if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Like what he has said is ODB doing ODB has been what has made him successful up until this point. And if I think that if he pulls off, when you pull off the pedal of gangster, like you lose respect. And in the world of like gangster and like hip hop and all of these things, it's very important to be true to who you are. And if you at all show that you haven't been true to who you are, people lose trust in you. They have to trust you. You have to be credible.
And ODB was genuine. One thing about Return to the 36 Chambers, if anybody hasn't heard this record, it opens with this skit. It's like a 4-minute skit. Probably one of the worst openings to any record that I ever heard in my life. I'm being
bad,
honest,
yeah.
Okay? It's awful. And you're like, whoa, this is not going to be good. Because Method Man T'Cal just came out, which is another member of the Wu-Tang Clan, and this is the one that followed that. And that intro, you were like, holy shit, he is not going to take this serious. By track 6, Rawhide, you already got through Brooklyn Zoo and Shimmy Shimmy Ya. The record was excellent. And you're like, wow, no, his voice is special, despite this intro that was pretty much just nonsensical, you know? And that's where you're like, wow, I have to be patient with this guy. There's a slow build to what ODB does. He's not the fastest. He's not the quickest. He's not the wittiest. But man, when you take it at all in stride, the entire record, this is special, you know? And that's something that, you know, Enter the Wu-Tang 36 Chambers, ODB was a very important part to that record, but he was a part. And to see him branch out like this, it showed and put him on notice that not only was he one of the most important MCs at the time, but he didn't give a fuck about what came before him.
What do you guys do to give back to the community? Also directed mostly towards ODB. I know Praz and the Fugees do things for the community, but what is going to be your thing for the community?
Nothing.
1995 would continue to be a huge year for ODB. Back in those days, rap and R&B didn't mix well at all. Many artists tried to blend the two genres, but to no avail.
Oh, see, I want to give y'all a little announcement, man. For the last year, there's been a lot of music coming out. The shit been weak, you know what I'm saying? A lot of niggas try to take hip-hop and make that shit R&B. Rapping bullshit, you know what I'm saying? Or make that shit funk. Fuck that. This is MCing right here. This is hip-hop.
That was until pop superstar Mariah Carey collaborated on a single, Fantasy. The song was an instant smash, but if Old Dirty Bastard was involved, you knew it wasn't going to be easy.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the Old Dirty Doggy.
Here we go now. Me and Mariah go back like babies with pacifiers. Old Dirt Dog, no liar. Keep the fantasy hot like fire.
Jump. Let me see you do the stomp. Girls, let me see you shake your rump. Fellas, get it from the back and pump. Let's do it.
I'm a little bit country. I'm a little bit rock. I don't stow the soul. Big letters all big and bold.
Old Dirty Bass, Dirty Bass glow.
According to the A&R rep Corey Rooney, he says ODB wanted $15,000 to rap on the record, which was a lot of money at the time, but they still caved. When it was time to record, Dirty then showed up 3 hours late to the studio, drunk and screaming in his phone, threatening a woman, saying he was going to kill her and kick her ass, then whispering, "I love you," and then going back to screaming at her again for another hour. He then asked Rooney and his execs if they could go leave and get a bottle of Moet and some Newports, but at that time, the liquor store was closed, and then ODB went on a tirade saying that they were white devils and they didn't want the black man to ever have shit. Now Mariah Carey is calling her boyfriend and head of Sony Entertainment, Tommy Mottola, every hour asking what the ODB tracks sounded like. Now Tommy Mottola, the head of Sony, has to get involved. And this must have jolted Dirty because afterward they started laying down tracks one line at a time. According to Corey, ODB started the line with, "Yo, me and Mariah go back like babies and pacifiers." Then paused and said, "Yo, I need another break," and slept for 45 minutes. Woke up and said, "Let me hear what I did so far." They played the one line back. He sang another line or two and then slept for another hour. This happened for 3 straight times. 3 hours went by, and if you listen to the record now, on his verse, you can hear that it's punched in pieces. He actually told the engineer, "Y'all better have your shit set and record it right, because I'm not doing this twice." And the music video for the song was another fiasco all in its own right. When most artists get the chance to work with a Mariah Carey, they button themselves up and get to work. Not ODB. Since R&B and rap didn't mix at the time, do you think he saw this collaboration as nothing more than a cash grab instead of an opportunity?
I don't think he cares about opportunities. I think that that's not like his mentality. I think his mentality is, I'm doing everybody a favor. My presence here is a gift. And like, that's really what he's at this point. You know, like, it's not about, he doesn't think that this is going to help him. He thinks that, you barely paid me enough to do this. You're lucky I'm even here.
If you think Return to the 36 Chambers, his first record, wasn't because his cousin RZA was producing it, that it got put together the way it got put together, you're a crazy person. ODB just showed up. And you just caught Wild on tape. That's all it was. That's all he ever was. Mariah Carey was a superstar. Superstar at this point. Still is, technically. But at this point, anything she did would get your face on the screen to 40 million people across the world. And this is how serious he took it.
I think when hip-hop started, the people wouldn't take a taking to it. Because the children took a taking to it. The parents had to listen to the children because the children have a voice. You understand? And the parents had to listen to that voice. They had to accept their children's report cards as it was. They could change it, but the children is just too wild. They love to hear this music. So they had to accept it. You know what I'm saying? This is how it became a culture.
In 1997, ODB and Wu-Tang Clan would reunite yet again. And on June 3rd, 1997, they would release their most commercially successful record, a double album titled Wu-Tang Forever.
But y'all thought y'all wasn't gonna see me? I'm the Osiris of this shit. Wu-Tang is here forever, motherfuckers. This 97... My niggas and my niggerettes, let's do it like this. I'ma rub your ass in the moonshine. Let's take it back to 79.
Despite limited radio and TV airplay, and a lead single that clocked in at 6 minutes with no chorus, Wu-Tang Forever debuted at number one on the Billboard 200 with 612 copies sold its first week and became quadruple platinum 4 months later and later received a Grammy nomination for Best Rap Album. Although this was a double album, ODB had fewer appearances on this album than he did on the group's debut album, which was a single album.
Oh, yeah. Assholes. You're the type of bitch don't appreciate shit. Never had shit, so you won't be shit. That pussy there couldn't satisfy a hair on my body. Keep me like a lottie and slide me down. Doodle Brown! Toss salad on you and some shit now.
calling me a dog, well leave a dog alone, cause nothing can stop me from burying my bones in the backyard of someone else's house. Old dirt dog, but I'm not dogged out. Here comes Rover, slipping at your ass. But pardon me, bitch, as I shit on your grass. That means, ho, you've been shitted on. I'm not the first dog that shitted on your lawn.
It was never explained why he made limited appearances on Wu-Tang Forever, but do you feel that this was a sign that maybe his brothers in Wu-Tang were finally getting tired of Dirt's antics?
Wu-Tang Forever, ODB doesn't exist. He's on one track where he's the lead, and then he does like three other tracks, like where he does little chorus parts. That's a double record. Think about that. We're going over 2 hours, and there's maybe 8 minutes of ODB on that record. Maybe 10, and I'm pushing it, okay? So, yeah, they're done with his antics. But he's not trying to be a hip-hop artist anymore. He's trying to be the persona of Old Dirty Bastard.
The head of Sony Entertainment couldn't bring him in. Like, of course. Like, what is, like, at this point, he's out of control. You know, right. At this point, his ego has become his career. And when your ego becomes your career, we see it time and time again. We've covered many people that this happens on RTO. And when your ego becomes your career, when your career becomes your ego and they become one and the same, you can ride that dragon into the depths of hell, or you can, you know, survive as long as you can on it. But this is not a train that goes down very healthy tracks.
If G.G. Allin had a RZA, GZA, Method Man, and U-God behind him, or Inspector Deck, whatever, you know, if he had that team behind him, G.G. Allin would have had a real fruitful career. But no, he didn't. So he ate shit on stage.
You know, just I keep it real. I keep it live. That's Old Dirty, and he's a bastard.
In 1998, luck once again lands in Dirty's lap. Pros from the Fugees and new artist Maya were setting up in a recording studio. Old Dirty Bastard burst in by mistake, but after hearing what the two were working on, ODB asked if he could be a part of the song, to which Pros agreed.
I don't know if he was drunk, but I know he didn't know the state he was in. So I don't, meaning like in the USA, he thought he was in a different state. I was in California. He thought he was in New York City. I don't know if he was drunk. I don't know what it was. I don't know if he was tired. I can't say it. God bless his soul, by the way. But he just didn't know where he was at. And so he thought my session was his session. The dialogue was pretty much, I was sitting there trying to figure out what's going on. But I was being respectful. You know, he's a fellow artist. We don't have no beef with him, you know. Trying to get him out the nicest way. Like, nah, this is, you know. But the music is looped in the background. It's being played. Finally, he's like, yo, what's that? I'm like, oh, this is something I'm working on. What? Put it up. So the engineer turns it up a little. That shit's hot. I need to get on this. Thinking to myself. All right. So then I explained to him what was happening. He goes in the booth, lay his vocals. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to erase this shit. It's all said and done. Shit turned on hot. We kept it.
Then in 1998, the song Ghetto Superstar would be released, landing Dirty another platinum single.
Ghetto Superstar, that's what you are. Coming from afar, reaching for the stars. Run away with me to another place. We can rely on each other. From one corner to another.
One, two. Don't stop, yo. My eyes are sore. Being a senator behind closed doors, hitting truth to the sea floor. The rich don't north, ignore the tug of war. While the kids are poor, open new and better drugstores. So I became hardcore, couldn't take it no more. I'ma reveal everything, change the law. I find myself walking the streets, trying to find what's really going on in the streets.
Also in 1998, once again, violence found ODB. This time, gunmen broke into his girlfriend's house and shot Old Dirty Bastard in the back during a robbery. The wounds turned out to be non-fatal, narrowly missing vital organs, and of course Dirty would again leave the hospital against doctor's wishes the same day.
They said Dirty's been shot. The first thing I said, is he living? Because I know Dirty, he plays a lot. But the crazy thing is, when I got to the hospital, he was sitting there in the bed laughing to my mommy, let's sing. I said, boy, you, he said, let's get that, but let's sing a song. I said, boy, you nuts. I said, you crazy. He actually wanted to sing it. All the doctors came in, he threw him out. He said, come on, mom, let's hit a tune. I said, you know one thing? I just don't know about you. I'm just, he was just strong will. Now you shot. You simply talking about, mommy, let's sing a tune. You know, I don't know.
They say he left the hospital to say he climbed out the window.
Days later, he was caught shoplifting a $50 pair of sneakers while carrying $500 at the time. After failing to appear in court several times, he was eventually issued bench warrants. Also in 1998, he was arrested for criminal threatening after a series of confrontations in Los Angeles and was then rearrested for similar charges after that. And was again arrested for attempted murder and criminal weapons possession, which, thankfully for him, was eventually dismissed. All this happened after only a few months ago, he and his brothers in Wu-Tang celebrated having a number one album. At this point, does this feel like a man doing what he wants to do when he wants to do it? Or is this a man that clearly cannot stop getting in his own way?
You guys think he had a clear memory from 1996 to 1998?
Absolutely.
No.
Absolutely not. Everything, he's not even aware of what he's doing. He's just getting arrested for just being fucked up on everything, whether it be alcohol, drugs, anything that he's doing. He's virtually just in a haze walking around as a celebrity with people trying to take things from him and him being on the spot. I don't think he had one clear conscience or motive for any of the shit he's doing. He simply is, like, to the 50th power, an addict.
When Dirty's home, Dirty's just being himself. Dirty either partying or Dirty relaxing. That's all. Dirty like to go and have some clams and some lobster and some cocktail shrimp.
I jerk my dick off, man, every day, man.
Dirty like to go to the clubs, you know, and sit there and ballet and party.
Also in 1998, while recording at his Brooklyn recording studio, he was a witness to a car accident that left a four-year-old girl pinned underneath a Mustang. While the angry mob wanted to attack the driver for his recklessness, Dirty organized about a dozen people to lift the car off the girl, who was rushed to the hospital with first and second degree burns. Using a false name, ODB would visit this girl in the hospital until he was spotted by members of the media.
I was grateful that, you know, he was there, you know, to help me, because then I probably wouldn't have been in this world right about now.
I really appreciated what he did because it was a crowd of people. And nobody was really stepping forward. They were inciting me to have the man who hit her beat up.
He could have been like all the other people that were standing in the crowd saying, you know,
beat the man.
Yeah.
He stepped up and he did something.
Unfortunately, this act of selflessness was short-lived and barely made headlines due to the hijinks that immediately followed him the very next evening. It was the 1998 Grammy Awards and Wu-Tang Forever was nominated as Best Rap Album, coming up short to Puff Daddy's No Way Out. This did not sit well with our friend Russell Jones. Later on in the evening, while Sean Colvin was making her way to the stage to accept her Grammy for Best Song, according to ODB, something jumped into his blood and he rushed the stage. He launched into a brief statement pretty much condemning the industry for awarding the Grammy to Puffy and not Wu-Tang, stating his now infamous line, "Wu-Tang is for the children."
Please calm down. The music and everything. I said, I went and bought me an outfit today that costed a lot of money today. You know what I mean? Because I figured that Wu-Tang was going to win. I don't know how y'all see it, but when it comes to the children, Wu-Tang is for the children. We teach the children. You know what I mean? Puffy is good, but Wu-Tang is the best. Okay? I want y'all to know that this is ODB and I love you all. Peace.
Not even 48 hours prior to the incident, he was a hero for saving a little girl's life, and now he was seen as the villain of the Grammys. It's clear he lived a life of extremes. But is this erratic behavior drug and alcohol abuse, or is it much more than that?
Like, all these things is just, it's just cries for help. You know, this is, people don't behave like this unless they're sick. You know, this is the behavior of somebody who has complete and total loss of control.
I mean, I disagree. I think it was a choice all the way through with him. As much as he did with the drugs and alcohol to himself, and that's the life he wanted to be that fucked up all the time. He was a good person. I'm never going to say an addict's not a good person inside, but when they're on crack, they can put a baby in a fucking microwave, dude. And ODB decided to live in that haze for fucking years. When a child wasn't hurt and he went out there and he did a good thing and he saved that little girl and he visited her, you see that his heart is real, his heart is true, but his choices and his addictions, you can nail him with 55 mental illnesses. You want to know why? Because he's doing crack, he's doing coke, he's doing anything he can put his hands on. So every chemical in his body is fucking beyond out of whack, going on 10 years straight now.
Since y'all was talking about saying with fear, take all this out of my mouth for a second.
That just pops right out? Man.
Yeah, it pops right out. Let me let y'all know how I feel. To me, it's like everybody's scared of the government, you know what right. I'm saying? Because they killed Tupac and they killed Biggie Smalls. I don't care what y'all say. That's my seeing. Who cares? I'm just letting y'all know, y'all could be afraid of the government all y'all want to. Y'all been afraid of the government for 29 years. Y'all ain't telling me I was Jesus, so it's okay. I love you. Don't, you know. You know what I'm saying? I'm just letting y'all know all that afraid of the government stuff. You know what I'm saying? That's dead in my life, man, because I got special things to put on people. You know what I'm saying? But don't get me wrong, I love y'all, you know what I'm saying? If you're gonna be real, you know what I'm saying? That's all I'm saying. Don't play no games. This ain't no games no more. All right? If you're gonna be real, keep it real. When you see my next album, God Made Dirt, and Dirt Don't Hurt Baby Jesus, then you're gonna see what's really real and what's gonna happen.
January 14th, 1999, ODB would be accused of firing shots at plainclothed police officers after they stopped his car in New York City. The officers would fire 8 shots at Dirty, which thankfully never hit him. The case would be dropped after the court heard Dirty was armed with nothing but a cell phone. There was no gun or shell casings other than the shell casings from the police officers found at the scene.
So the police stopped. Woo, 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 woo. He said, man, just calm down. I mean, they ain't talking about me. I said, yeah, man, he telling us to pull over. Right? So, you know, we stopped. Dirty said, yo, officer. Look, put his head out the window. I'm ODB. The officer came with his gun out like we were a threat to them. Like they wanted us. I seen it in their face. They was coming with guns. One came on this side, the other came on this side with their guns out pointing at them. So Dirty was like, man, these niggas trying to kill me. And I said, you know how Dirty talk. He think everybody trying to get him. Considering what he done been through, he done been shot over here, stabbed, done this and that. So I guess his mind flipped and he said, man, I'm out of here. And he put his feet on the gas and he broke out. That made them start shooting. I don't think they really, legally, that they were supposed to shoot. They shot so many shots that we just kept it moving. Turned the corner. We running crazy. So we called my aunt. We happened to be right around this. I said, yo, man, pull up and park right in front of that car. Next thing you know, my aunt comes downstairs.
Third time he got shot, the only thing, one thing the cops didn't know, he called his mother. It took me like 5 minutes to get down there. They had him down on the ground. They told me, got the rest, I ain't moving. I said, you won't kill my son here. So I heard the cops say, well, we got a big fish here. I said, you're going to regret those words.
After getting shot in the back in this near-death experience with the police, according to multiple reports, Dirty was never the same. He was starting to become paranoid and constantly looked over his shoulder. The following month, he would be arrested again for driving without a license and for being a convicted felon while wearing a bulletproof vest, which was illegal at the time. There was even one instance where he claims he left his house at 2 a.m. to get some ice cream. While he was walking, he swore he was being followed. He started running, and his fear prompted him to jump into a random person's backyard with 3 Rottweilers waiting for him. After he was running around the garden with the dogs nipping at his heels, the owner heard the commotion and opened the back door to see what was happening. Dirty sprinted to the door, ran up the stairs into the owner's home, and jumped out of a second-story window, breaking several bones in the process. But before you could even laugh at this and put your hands on your hips and say, "Ho, Dirty," a few weeks later, in March 1999, Dirty would be arrested for possession of crack cocaine and again in July for the same charge.
But yeah, I mean, it was going on for so long, even before he went to jail, like, one thing about Dirty is he always, you know, he showed his loyalty to the family, but he always had his extended family, which was cats that was always around him. And you know, them niggas, they street niggas. They like any other niggas you pick up from the block, and you know, they indulge, and you know what I mean? Niggas is doing what they do to get high. It's the same shit. Yo, you wanna get high? What you wanna do? You wanna do this? You wanna do that? I'm gonna get you whatever. So you know, he kind of kept them away from us to a degree, you know what I mean? Because he knew that we knew what they was doing to him. You know what I mean? I always look at it like if you run with that flock of niggas and one nigga getting high and two or three niggas getting high, and you know, you might be the last nigga getting high, you and somebody else. But all y'all niggas is fucking fiends now. You know what I mean? In y'all own little way. Hey, nigga, we used to snip blow and, you know what I mean, do what we did or whatever. We was fiends to that. You know what I mean? You a fiend, nigga. You know what I mean? But at the end of the day, Dirty had his own lifestyle. And when he came to do work with us, it was like sometimes we had to deal with it, sometimes we didn't. You know what I mean? Like, I might have been one of the only niggas in the crew, and he told me this a long time ago. He said, yo, Ray, let me tell you something. He said, yo, I let any of these woo niggas have it. He said, I'll give it to any one of these niggas when it come to standing on what I stand on. But for you, it's like you come so knowledgeable and so, you know, you put me where I need to be at, and you do it in a way where it's like, yo, I respect it. He never drama me for nothing. You know what I mean? Because I come right up and tell him the truth. If you looking stupid or you looking smart. You know what I mean? So me and him always had that relationship, but at the end of the day, we just let a grown man be a grown man. Gotta let him do that though. But you understand what I'm saying?
I understand.
You let a nigga be who he is because that's who he wanna be. You know what I mean? It's nothing wrong with that, man. I don't take that away from anybody who get high. You know what I mean? But if it's hurting you, then like you said, you gotta stand up and say something, but it's only so much you could tell a nigga.
Now with crack taking over Dirty's life, do you view this paranoia as something people in the spotlight go through? Was it a result of crack cocaine, or was it the consequences of his past transgressions?
I counted 24 arrests in 2.5 years over just nonsense. All of it, nonsense. Drug-related stupidity. Nothing with any motive behind it, you know? Jumping out of a window, breaking your legs, jumping in someone's backyard where dogs attack you. Think about this mentality. At 2 a.m. trying to get ice cream. Think about that story for a second. That was his life for a decade.
Trying to finish up this joint with him and Ludacris, you know what I mean? You know, some of the vocals, they were all right and shit. You know what I'm saying? That was when he was in his all right times when he first came home. So now we trying to get him in a whole new mode and get the right vocals and shit like this.
Also in the same year, Dirty was paid $30,000 to record a song with the Insane Clown Posse. It took him only 2 days to record his track, but with Dirty spiraling out of control, his recordings consisted of nothing but him rambling about bitches. It took ICP a week to assemble 4 rhymes out of Dirty's ramblings using Pro Tools because his raps were out of sync with the original beat. ICP eventually had to re-record their lines and retitled the song Bitches.
Don't talk about bitches, I'm fucking dumb. Please know fat bitches, I'm fucking slim. Unless it's one of those nights I'm smoking my shit. I don't care about how I'm fucking it. How much it costs, big fat crackhead? Ain't trying to hear all them words you say. 5 minutes, bitch, and I came. Fuck your name and from where you came. I don't give a fuck, bitch. I would kill you. You, Shaquita. You, Belinda! You too, Passion! Bitch!
With these erratic performances starting to become the norm, do you think he even cares about the product he's putting out anymore? Or is it safe to say that Dirty is just getting by on his own hype?
I think we wouldn't have the album if it wasn't for his cousins. Like, so I don't think that he ever cared about the product he was putting out.
I agree 100%.
Jesus, what you doing, Jesus?
Working on your album.
Yeah, yeah.
Looking for new girls
to put babies in.
All right.
While awaiting his sentencing and in between stints in jail, ODB still managed to release Nigga Please on September 14th, 1999, which debuted at number 10 on the Billboard charts and certified gold only 3 months later. The album didn't garner the same acclaim as his first release, but it was still seen as a success thanks to the mega single, Got Your Money.
Nigga played in the club like this all night. Bitches put your ass out, let me hold it tight. You're looking at my wrist, ain't this so nice? The price, bitch, is diamond, shining, disco line. You better help me solve my problem. I'ma get this money and rob them. Lucky dog when I won the Lotto. Ran up on my car, I'm carrying Rilo. But hold on, you can call me dirty and then lift up your skirt. And you want some of this dirty? God made dirt and dirt bust your ass. Nah. Stop annoying me, yeah, I play my music loud. And take the bats and old dirty to move the crowd. Just say he had his dick in his mouth. Eddie Murphy taught me that back of the but house. But give him the money.
Hey, dirty, baby, I got your money. Don't you worry. I said, hey, baby, I got your money.
Now, before the album Dirty, by this time, had a litany of aliases, such as Big Baby Jesus, Dirt McGirt, and Osiris, just to name a few, had announced multiple title possibilities for the album that included Dirty's World, God Made Dirt and Dirt Don't Hurt, and my personal fave, The Black Man is God, White Man is the Devil. Coming from a marketing perspective, I think he made the right choice. Then in November of 1999, Dirty would have to face the music. He would be sentenced to a year in a lockdown drug rehabilitation facility and 3 years probation after pleading no contest to separate charges of threatening to kill security guards at a nightclub in L.A., being a convicted felon while wearing a bulletproof vest, and other multiple arrests for crack cocaine.
I took him seriously. When he said that somebody wanted to hurt him, the FBI was after him, the CIA, I believed him. I bought him all this spy equipment so he could monitor himself. I mean, I spent $50,000 on that. I bought him the bulletproof vest he got caught with. I bought him the vest. I bought him all these things to help protect him. And it all backfired in a way. He got arrested with the vest.
But in mid-October of 2000, just 2 months short of completing his treatment, ODB broke out of the drug rehab facility. Dirty went right back to what he knew. He went to see RZA in the recording studio. Then, after a month on the run from authorities, the Wu-Tang Clan performed live at Manhattan's Hammerstein Ballroom. ODB, wearing a yellow jacket with a hoodie strings pulled extra tight like Kenny from South Park, took the stage and the audience went nuts. Then, days later, while signing autographs and taking pictures with fans at a Philadelphia McDonald's, ODB would finally be arrested and eventually be sentenced to 2 to 4 years in prison.
You're not gonna go to a penitentiary for doing whatever, you know, drugs or whatever it is, driving around your car without a license. That don't happen to you. They did that to him for a reason. They wanted to shut him up.
Freedom, you know, to his ability to live it and express it comes with a price.
They say too much of anything will kill a man. Too much truth, too much to tell a lie. But a man must tell the truth and shame the devil.
Every day, like, man, probably 3 times a day, I jerked my dick off so much that the prisoners was actually saying, yo, Dirty, chill the fuck out. You know what I'm saying? Because I couldn't help it. Every bitch I saw on TV, her ass looked as funny to me. And I just kept jerking my dick off every day, every night.
If you didn't understand what was happening to Dirty, you would think he was a superhero. Bust out of rehab, goes on stage in front of thousands, and even took the time to sign autographs and take pictures with fans. He seemed larger than life. But do you think his fans recognized the early stages of dissent, or did he represent a beacon of rebellion?
I don't know, man. I feel like this is weird because we kind of have to talk about the decade and stuff, because I don't feel like fans of music were really hyper aware of meltdowns and all this stuff until later in, with the internet getting bigger and a story started to catch. I don't think
it was a completely different time.
It was more about lore. And when something is lore, it feels, you know, there's something humanizing about seeing the picture of the celebrity in the middle of a meltdown, right? We see that in the tabloid. We see them drunk in the gutter and we're like, oh, wow, there's compassion to be pulled on there and my heartstrings. But when you're just telling me this crazy story about this, like, gangster and he's, like, so cool and he breaks out of rehab, it's just, like, lore. It's legend, man. I don't think that it makes fans go, oh, he's falling from grace. I think it makes fans go, hell yeah, ODB, that's what's up, you know?
And especially when the fans, they can't follow his every step, like you can now with today's celebrities. In today's world, a celebrity is constantly underneath a microscope. Back then, you could do this shit and the public still wouldn't know.
The government brainwash our people with the mind control theory. That's what they do. So they make sure our people like it. They keep playing that same song. The same song keep playing, you start to like it. You start to get cloned with it. You start to get cloned with it. So then for the clone exists, then it just takes over. It takes over the human body. It takes over the spirit. It takes over the soul. And therefore, behold, that's what you got. That's why Dirty is here for. Dirty here just to keep it dirty. Dirty, 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 where we all come from.
Life in prison was hard for Dirty. The prison was located 350 miles away from home, which made it difficult for his loved ones to see him, including his brothers in Wu-Tang Clan, who Dirty later said never came to see him. He was put on suicide watch and assaulted. And on top of all of that, in 2001, his record label, Elektra Records, made the decision to release a greatest hits album despite there only being 2 albums in his back catalog, just so they could profit off the negative publicity garnered by Dirty and their 3-year record deal with him. Is it safe to say that at this point, Russell Jones has hit rock bottom?
Yeah. To me, he's like a ball of flame. Like, he's just catching and just burning through life, right? It's just this existent thing that's there. There's no motivation. There's no drive. There's no vision of where things are going. He was just burning up fuel of life until he got to where he is right now.
I don't think he's at rock bottom at all. Because when he gets out, someone will pay him to be his old self. Someone will write him a check to be that disastrous class clown again and write songs and put drugs in his face and put alcohol in his face. Not just somebody, a lot of people will. Elektra was done with his bullshit, so they finished up his contract. Oh, he's in jail. This is not worth our time. The second he gets out of jail, does anybody in this room doubt that there's not going to be five guys to be like, here's a fucking contract? B-O-D-B.
When Dirty walked out of jail, he had his own clothesline and he had a record deal.
When he got out of the jail, we went to Rockefeller and they signed that deal. We were so happy for him. We were singing in the limo. We just really had a good time that day. We were so proud of him. He really did this for my mother. You know what I'm saying? My mother just wanted the best for him. And that's all we wanted for him, was the best. So as far as when they was announcing that he signed with The Rock at the press conference, Mariah Carey was there. She's a trooper. She's been there for him. And everything he do, I don't care what trouble he got into, Mariah Carey has always been there.
In 2003, on the day he was released from prison, ODB would sign with Rockefeller Records. While living at his mother's house under house arrest and a court order probation, ODB would use his criminal record as the basis for a new VH1 reality show titled Inside Out, Old Dirty Bastard on Parole. The show was a tough watch. Dirty was no longer the court jester. He was a broken man just trying to get by.
He was never the same when he came out. He could sit down and hold a conversation with you, you know, but his mind was not all there.
You know, but was he not right in the head? I mean, prison messed him up. People tried to kill him. They broke his jaw. Sure, he wasn't right in the head. He spent 3 years in jail for no damn reason. He came out and he had a whole different perspective on life.
There are many lessons to be gained from this show, but how empty do TV producers have to be on the inside to even air a show based off someone's fall from grace?
How empty are the consumers? How empty are his fans? Fans should be friends. They should give a fuck about you. They shouldn't demand you to be back on drugs.
Do you think it's fair to say, though, that the fans didn't know just how bad it was until the show?
It is super fair to say the fans didn't know until the show was out there. You're right. But again, what I'm trying to say is that the consumer should have turned off and be like, yo, he needs help. And they didn't do that.
It's part of the culture that we had created with, you know, the celebrity tabloid, and we treat our celebrities like demigods. And because we treat our celebrities like demigods, we do enjoy their fall as much as we enjoy their rise.
He's somebody sick, you put him away where they can get help, not in the maximum security prison. They took his life. And it was not necessary.
In 2004, Russell Jones would drop the name Old Dirty Bastard in exchange for Dirt McGirt and began recording a new album with Dame Dash Music with the working title A Son Unique. The album was never finished and was released posthumously by Dame Dash. The album briefly saw the light of day, but has since been put on hold by the parent label, Rockefeller Records. Why do you think they would not release this record?
ICP had him do a song, and they had to piece it together. It took them a week to put this song, Bitches, together. Mariah Carey, three verses. It took them hours and days for him to even spit those out. What do you think this process was for these guys? You think that there was anything that they could have done that wasn't going to be completely made in the studio, edited together? His cousins aren't there right now. RZA's not there, right? He's split apart because nobody visited him in jail, right? So that there was a little bit of a falling out, not that they weren't communicating, but there was a falling out when it came to working. So he had a completely different team. The only reason they wouldn't put this record out, because it was a cash grab on any level, is because the quality of the record probably was subpar. And they needed to put a lot of work into it to a point where, you know what, ODB isn't the star.
When you're an entertainer, your persona is stock. There's like a value to it. And I think that after the reality show, ODB's value kind of dipped. You know, people are less likely to buy into the gangster who doesn't give a fuck when you find out just how much he gives a fuck, right? And to Pete's point, I do believe this is probably poor quality record. And you can put out a poor quality or mediocre quality record if the person's persona has high stock, right? It has to be some sort of balance. But when your stock loses, you have to put out excellent product in order to bring that stock back up. And I just think they were at a point where the value of ODB's name wasn't going to hold up against the quality of the record.
She called her cell phone, and he said she wanted to speak to me. And I think he had a premonition that he was going to die. And she said, Dad, he said, I want to tell you something before you die, talking about me. I said, what? He said, I love you. You're my heart. And he hung up the phone and never got a chance to respond back to him, you know. And a few months later, he was dead.
Well, me and my partner booked a tour on a Wednesday.
He came to the house. He laid on the couch. He laid his head in my lap. And I rubbed his head till he fell asleep. When he woke up in the morning, I took him upstairs, put him in the shower, and I bathed him. I dressed him for the tour, packed his clothes up, and he told me, Mommy, he kissed me. He said, it's the last time you're going to see me. You're never going to see me again. And I never saw him again. That was it.
On November 14th, 2004, while in RZA's recording studio, Russell Tyrone Jones succumbed to a lethal mixture of cocaine and tramadol. He was 36.
But other Wu-Tang members are in the studio with you, and your dad is there. And you're how old at the time?
I'm about 30.
But other Wu-Tang members are in the studio with you, and your dad is there. And you're how old at the time?
I'm about 13, 15.
Okay, so you know, 14, 15 years old. And your dad actually tells you to watch him while he's smoking.
Yeah, okay. I was with my cousin, you know, Carl Mason. He was like, he was allowed to go to the studio. My father was on the other side. We had to sit in a little couch area. He said, sit right there and watch me get high. He didn't basically say it, you know, but he told me I couldn't move nowhere just for that final moments. No, he didn't want to go up there anyways to the studio. He was like, I don't want to go up there. He was seeing things before it happened, like it's angels around him and shit.
Had you seen that before, or was this the first time you actually saw it?
The first time. I used to smoke weed when I was younger, but this was different. My father doing it in front of me and looking dead in my eye. So it was like, it was time. Okay. Time to elevate.
So he sat there in front of you, he got high, and then what happened afterwards?
What happened after he got high?
Yeah. I mean, did he?
Well, what happened after he got high? They made us go in a limo. I went back in my food stamp limo, back to Brevoit Projects, you know, and then we got the call. Ring, ring. Old dirty bastard, he might be dead.
Following the passing of Russell Jones, many speculated that he was not only suffering from drugs, but mental instability. One music biographer, James Parker, claims Russell was diagnosed with schizophrenia back in 2003. The diagnosis came very late in his life, and back in 2003, mental illness wasn't taken as seriously as it is now. How much of a difference do you think it would have made if Russell received that diagnosis in modern times?
How much difference would it have made to Russell? Would he have cared?
Probably not.
Because I can diagnose everybody in the world, or a professional can say, hey, you're schizophrenic. If you don't take the steps to change who you are and your life, it's just a diagnosis.
Well, and that's the issue with most schizophrenics, especially like if you're paranoid schizophrenic, you believe that everyone's out to get you. So when the doctor tells you you're schizophrenic, you believe he's out to get you, and the pills are out to get you, and the pills are poisoning you, and somebody's chasing me, and I'm in a backyard. You know, like that's the problem, is that illness feeds itself. So even if we were in today's day and age where there is much more comprehensive treatment plans for schizophrenics, to Pete's point, if you don't show up for treatment, you can't get treated.
And you can argue that schizophrenia made him great.
I was fucked up. Crying nigga, you know what I mean? I'm on the highway like this hurt. I had to pull over. I could have got killed on the expressway. Like, you know, when I heard it, because it was like when you know something's wrong with one of your brothers and you see him going down and you see him going down, but there's no way that you could really save him. And then you hear it. It's like you almost predicted it, and it's so fucked up when you predict shit, because you never know. You could bring certain worlds into your life, you know what I mean, if you keep predicting shit or thinking shit's gonna happen. So yeah, it touched me, man. Come on, man, this is a nigga that, this was our leading guy, man. You know what I mean? It's the guy that put the spirit in all of us, my nigga, like real talk, for real. He put the spirit in me. So when I heard, yeah, I'm crying my heart out. Raced up to the studio, yeah, seen him on the floor, flattened. flat and stiff.
You actually went to where it was?
Yeah, I ran right up there. You know what I mean? I was on my way into the city anyway. But when I heard it was like, and it happened in the studio, so I'm like automatically, let me go over there, man. Cause this is some shit I can't really believe. And yo, I walked upstairs, boom, 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 fucked up, you know what I mean? And he was there, man. You know what I mean? But he had a smile on his face. Like, he had a face of bravery. Like this is where I want to go right now, my nigga. I'm like, fucked up.
So he was smiling as he...
He didn't have a smile, but he had like a face like, yo, this is where I want to walk right now. You know what I mean? Like, for real, I look at niggas' faces when they die. Like, the last face that, you know, was left. You know what I mean? Because that I seen niggas mad in the box. You know what I mean? Some niggas get killed over shit, and you see, he know he fucked up. He know he fucked up, and that face is on him right there. So, you know, yeah, he had a face like, yo, I need to walk this way right now.
His cousin Robert Diggs, the RZA, wrote this in memory of his cousin in the book, The Tao of Wu. Trust me, the man who became ODB, Ahsan Unique, my cousin, he was a scientist and a minor prophet. People may not know this from the outrageous character he played, but ODB was a visionary, but he decayed. He lost that vision. From the time they put him in jail, to all the drugs he was doing, to all the stress he went through with his family, it took away his ability to see. And this night, he sat there and looked me in the eye and said, RZA, I don't understand. Now I know, right there. Right when he said that, we lost him. 8 hours later, ODB was gone.
You know, and I feel good to be able to express myself and have my talent, to give my talent to the world, to the universe, so they can accept my talent and love it. Love it. You know what I'm saying? Because you ain't gonna never see no talent like this again in your life. You'll love it.
My co-hosts, Petr Spych, on Facebook and Twitter at Rise to Offend, and on Instagram at Rise to Offend Official. Jocelyn Sharp on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Jocelyn Sharp, and myself, Brandon Hahn, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Mr. Hahn Comedy. And make sure to listen to us every Monday on the Metal Sucks podcast on metalsucks.net. Email us any comments, questions, or errors we may have made, or any figure you would like us to cover at risetooffend@gmail.com. Discover the career of Old Dirty Bastard and the Wu-Tang Clan through albums, DVDs, and all media platforms. And don't forget to catch their recent Wu-Tang documentary of Mics and Men on Showtime. All content provided is copyrighted by its owners. Thank you so much for the reviews on iTunes. These 5-star reviews are helping this show grow, and it's all we can ask from you guys. Please, if you listen to the show and appreciate all the hard work behind it, review the show on iTunes for us. It truly means the world to us that you take the time to listen and review the show. We'll be back next week with a brand new topic. Until then, Repeat Offenders, RTO Podcast, signing off.